Hello and welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger, and Jeff Oswald will also be working through some texts with us today. And we are on Easter 7, and the Old Testament pericope is non-existent during the Easter season. So we'll be looking at the psalm for the day, which in this case is Psalm 68, verses 1 through 10. A couple weeks ago, I think Dr. Seleska worked through some later verses in this psalm, so now we kind of back up and start right at the beginning. So let's jump into the text. It's a beautiful psalm. It talks about what it means to come into the presence of Elohim, the presence of God, or even more precisely, it talks about what it means when God comes near to his people. What it means for his enemies, and then what it means for those who belong to him, the righteous. Verse 1 in the Hebrew, and I should note that if you are trying to follow this discussion based on your English Bible, the verses will be one off. And so anytime I reference a verse number, if you subtract 1, that'll be the verse in the English translation. Verse 1 in the Hebrew is the superscription of the psalm, and it begins, Lam Natzeach, Le David, Mizmor, Shir. Four independent words for the choir master, and then belonging to David, or authored by David, or associated with David. Lots of discussion on how to take that lamed before David in the Psalms. And then two words, two nouns that describe what kind of a piece of literature this is, Mizmor, psalm, and Shir, a song. Verse 2, Yakum Elohim, Yafutsu Oyevav, V'Yanusu M'Sanav, Mipanav. God will arise from Kum. His enemies, Oyevav, will be futs, scattered. And then the subject continues to refer to enemies, but we get a new word for enemy in the next colon, based on the root sana, to hate, the PL participle there, a substantive participle. His haters will noose, his haters will flee from his presence or from his face, mipanav. These call imperfect verbs here, yakum and then yafutsu and Yanusu, they can all be taken as justice in sense, even though, and this is a little strange, even though technically all of these verbs hypothetically have a distinctive justive form, and none of those justive forms are used here. So grammatically and morphologically, your first guess would be to read these as imperfects with either a future sense, God will arise, his enemies will be scattered, or possibly with kind of an ongoing customary sense. Yahweh arises, his enemies are scattered, or his enemies scattered. Most of the translations take this as a jussive, and we'll get a cue that we might want to take it in that direction when we get to the next verse. So let's just read them as justice for now. God will arise, his enemies will scatter, his haters will flee from his presence. Verse 3. Kahindof Ashan, Tindof, Kahimes, Donag, Mipnei Esh, Yovadu Rashaim, Mipnei Elohim. Some interesting forms here in these first two lines of poetry in verse 3. The first word begins with the preposition kaf, a comparison, and it's followed by a nifal participle. Hindof is the nifal participle of nadaf. Nadaf means to be blown away in the nifal. So like the being blown away of ashan, smoke. Or we might translate it like smoke is blown away. Tindof. Second masculine singular, perhaps again, jussive here, of nadaf, now in the call to blow away. You blow away. Even reading it as with an imperatival sense. Blow them away. And the you here referring to Elohim. This is probably our clue that we might want to take these as justives. All of a sudden, we've had all this third-person description of Yahweh, and now in verse 3, the speaker kind of turns his attention, and it becomes a plea to Yahweh himself in the second person. So like smoke is blown away, blow them away. Like the next colon here, kahimes is from a geminate verb, masas, and here it's in the nifal, again, infinitive construct with that strange hey performative. That hey performative throws people off sometimes on those nifal, some of those nifal forms. But it's a nifal infinitive construct, again, in a comparative structure here with the preposition kah. Like, and donag here means wax. So masas is a verb that means to melt in the nifal. Like the melting of wax, mipenei esh, from the presence of or because of fire. And then we come to the next line, yovedu rasha'im, the wicked, let them perish. If we continue this justice sense, let the wicked perish because of God, or from the presence, because of the presence of God. Notice the structure then in verse 3. It's kind of an interesting structure. There's three kola there, and the first two, which are printed both on the same line there in VHS, the first two have a certain parallelism, and then the second and third have a certain parallelism together. So both of the first two begin with a kaf plus a nifal infinitive construct, and refer to something disappearing. The smoke is blown away, the wax melts. The second colon, though, introduces this idea of from or because of fire, mipnei esh, and that parallels the third line, which echoes that thought, but now it makes the metaphor precise, and it tells you what the fire is being compared to. It's God's own presence, from because of the face of God, or because of the presence of God. Verse 4 then begins with a disjunctive vav. Notice the vav plus a non-verb, vadzadikim. And this is going to be an emphatic change in subject here. So we've had all of this information about or description of what happens to the wicked when God shows up on the scene, when his presence comes. Now it shifts its perspective to the righteous, verse 4. Vadzadikim yismaku yalak. Ya'altsu lifnei Elohim v'yasisu b'simkah. But as for the righteous, they samach, or let them samach, if we continue the jessive. Let them rejoice. Let them alat, another word for rejoice, a synonym. Let them rejoice lifnei Elohim, before God. So this isn't just a mere rejoicing in God, but it's actually a rejoicing lifnei Elohim, in the presence of God. This strong contrast with what happens with the wicked when God shows up, all of this dispersing. But when God shows up and the righteous are in his presence, two verbs of rejoicing. Now we get another verb of rejoicing from sis, the hollow root, yasisu, meaning to rejoice. And a bait of manner there, the last word in verse 4, basimcha. How will they rejoice? In joy. So you couldn't pile it up more than they have here. Three verbs of rejoicing and then a prepositional adverbial phrase telling us how are they doing all this rejoicing? Basimcha, in joy. Verse 5 extends this thought, but it begins it now with imperatives. Shiru lelohim, samaru shemo, solu La rokev ba'aravot, v'yah shemo, v'iltzu lefanav. Plural imperatives here, probably to be understood as addressed to the righteous ones who have been described in verse 4. So now the psalmist calls on these righteous ones who rejoice in God's presence to sing, shir. Sing to God. Samar is the root that we get mizmor, the word for psalm, from. It means to sing with a stringed instrument. So sing songs with instruments, you might say. Shemo, his name. Psalm his name, it says literally. Praise his name, in other words. Sholu La Rocave, or Salu La Rocave. This is a little bit of a difficult verb to decide on here in this psalm. It's not that we don't know that we don't, can't find a meaning for it. It's that two strong meanings suggest themselves and fit well in this context. Salal literally means to heap up, and it can be used in the sense of exalting or praising, the sense of heaping up praises towards, but also very frequently it's used with the accusative of derrick, away, or different words for road or highway. You build up or heap up a road, meaning you level it out and prepare it. Maybe the most well-known passage that uses it like this is Isaiah 62:10, that great reading for Christmas Day. Pass through the gates, heap up the highway. They're preparing the way for God. So is it saying here, echoing the thought of the previous, that all this rejoicing is happening, but they're to heap up praises to God, or is it that they're to heap up, understood, prepare a road, la rocave, ba'aravot, for the one riding, notice the call participle from rakav there to mount up or ride, from the one riding in the wildernesses, in the dry places. And there, based on the participle that's used, the one riding, that might suggest the highway version. So it could be understood in either way there, either the sense of preparing a road or heaping up praises. Now all of a sudden the verse has this interjection, B'yah Shemo, by means of Yahweh, his name. Now are they to heap up praises in Yahweh, his name, or by means of Yahweh, his name? It's a little strange to express it like that. The Septuagint actually leaves out the bait preposition here and simply says Yah Shemo, and it becomes just an interjection. Yahweh is his name. And that might be the easiest way to read this. And then it returns again to the imperative. Alats we had earlier, it was that synonym of samach, to rejoice. Rejoice, and the strong repetition of this prepositional phrase, lefanav, before him, in his presence. That completes this first section of the psalm, which compares what happens when God shows up on the scene. Recall what happens to the wicked. They are scattered, they flee, they are blown away like smoke, they melt like wax, they perish. In contrast, the righteous rejoice, rejoice, rejoice in joy, they sing, they psalm, they heap up praises or prepare the road, they rejoice in his presence. Verse 6, then, is now going to describe God himself, and it leads into a section that describes who is this God that is coming near to the earth, and what happens when he comes near? Why is it that his righteous ones are rejoicing so much at his coming? Avi Yatomim, V'dayan al manot, Elohim b'ma'on Kadsho. Avi is the construct of Av, father, and it's so father of, and Yatom is the word for orphan or fatherless one. So a father of fatherless ones. And the word Dayan is related to the verb din, to judge or to pronounce judgment or to execute justice. So he is a judge of Almanah. The plural of almanah, widows. So he's the one who secures justice for widows. He's the father for the fatherless, the securer of justice for widows. God is, and so now we finally get the subject. We have the predicate that comes first. These are the things that he is, and now the subject comes in the second column. Elohim is b'ma'on kadsho. Ma'on is a noun that's related to the verb ma'an, to remain, and it's the place of remaining, so the place that he inhabits or dwells. In the dwelling place of his holiness. And most translations take that as a genitive of attribution, attributive genitive, and so they translate it in his holy habitation, or in his holy dwelling place. continues this description of God now in verse 7. Elohim Moshiv Yehidim Baita Motzi Asirim Ba Kosharot Ak Sorarim Shakanu Sakika. God is, it begins, Elohim, God is, and now we have a participle from Yashav, not from Shuv, but from Yashav. That Mem Holam prefix tells you that it's a hithil participle of a first yod verb. So God is the one causing to dwell. He's the one who settles, in other words, in a transitive sense. He settles someone else. Who does he settle or cause to dwell? The plural of Yahid, Yakid, that's the case there. Yakid is a noun that means a lonely one or an abandoned one. It can also be an adjective, meaning lonely or abandoned. It's kind of interesting. Yakad means all. It's an adverb that means altogether. And Yakid is an adjective or a noun that means lonely or abandoned. So they're kind of opposites, but they're both related to the Hebrew word for one, akad. And so yakad means altogether as one, community, or altogether, and yakid means one all on its own, lonely or abandoned. What is God doing for the yakidim? He is settling them baita, into a house. Notice the directional hey on the end of bayit there. The participle here, then, Moshiv, can either be read as a predicate participle with God. God settles the abandoned one into a home. Or perhaps it could be read as a substantive, kind of like the previous verse where God was a father to these, a judge for these. Now he is the settler of. So God is the settler of the lonely one in a house. Elohim is Motzi, the one bringing forth Asirim, prisoners. And we could spend a long time talking about the word over the Atnak here, Ba Kosharot. It's a hapax legomena, and there are lots of different ways of taking this. The versions take it differently than the MT. The New International Version comes up with something completely different that I have no idea where they're getting their translation. But we aren't going to take time to discuss it now. We're just going to take it as in prosperity with a bait of manner. In prosperity, he's the bringer forth of prisoners in prosperity. Although it is interesting that it has a plural ending, and perhaps that invites us not to just read the noun, which, as I said, is kind of difficult to pin down, not just to read it as in prosperity, but perhaps into prosperous places. He brings forth the prisoners into prosperous places. Why do we want to say that? Because of the next line. The next line begins with ak. Ak is a particle of emphasis. Oftentimes it means surely or indeed, but here in this context it's probably strongly contrastive instead of simply emphatic. So however, read ak as however here. He's done all these things for the weak then. The fatherless, he's been a father to. The widow, he's been a protector of justice. The lonely, he's settled into dwellings. The prisoners, he's brought forth into places of prosperity. However, and now it goes back to the first theme, those who are his enemies. However, so rarim is a participle form from sarar, which in the call means to be stubborn. So, however, the stubborn ones, shakanu, they dwell, from shakan, sakika, they dwell in, and another very difficult word to pin down, probably means bare or parched land. They dwell in a parched land. So whereas the prisoners are brought forth out into prosperous places, those who are stubborn end up dwelling in a parched land. Contrast the places where they end up. Elohim Batsetika Lifne Ameka Batsa'adika Bishimon Selah. O God, this begins with a vocative. You can tell it's vocative because it addresses God in the second person in the next word. O God, when you went out before your people. Notice the second word there, betsaitika. That sait is the infinitive construct just in the call of yatzah. Those first yod and first nun verbs in the in their infinitive construct lose their first letter and add a tav on the end. So this is a temporal clause, the use of the infinitive construct as a temporal clause. O God, when you went forth before your people. Notice here this language of presence again, now reverse. Before it was the people standing before Yahweh, now it's Yahweh before the people. Another temporal clause with an infinitive construct, this time from sa'ad. When you sa'aded, when you marched or walked in the desert, a synonym there for wilderness or desert, Yishmon or Yishimon. And now Selah. This is a strange place for Selah, especially if you kind of have it filed away in your head that Selah means pause, which I think it's hard to get away from that intuitive sense. But here's one example that might suggest Selah probably means something besides pause, some kind of a directive for a change in the recitation or an amplification. Some people even say maybe it's related to that salal verb that we had earlier in the psalm, to heap up or pile up. So we're going to maybe heap up the volume or something here. In the end, we don't know what selah means, but it has a strange placement here. After a temporal clause, before the independent clause. So we've had this temporal clause. O God, when you went forth before your people, when you marched in the wilderness. And now verse 9. Eretz ra'asha, afshamayim, natafu, mipenei Elohim, seth sinai, mipenei Elohim, Elohei Yisrael. When God went forth in front of his people, what happened here? Verse 9. The land shook. Notice the third feminine singular call form of the verb for to shake or quake there. Eretz is feminine, so it takes that feminine verb. The land quaked. Even the heavens, nataft. It's just a call verb here, but it means to drip, usually. And how you visualize that exactly, earth shaking we can visualize or imagine, the heavens dripped. Now, some translations take that as drops, so the sense is the earth is shaking and the heavens, in a sense, are coming down to the earth. That would fit well with the Exodus narrative of Sinai. We're going to have rain enter the context, though, in our final verse, so perhaps it literally is talking about the cloud and the storm at Sinai and the sense of that thundercloud dropping rain. The heavens dripped because of the presence of God, mipenei Elohim. Ze Sinai, this is Sinai. From before God, the God of Israel. Now, the syntax here is strange, and again, we could talk for a long time, but we won't, about how to take this Ze Sinai here. In the end, the best way to take it is as referring back in apposition to Elohim in the previous. This one of Sinai, in other words. The heavens dripped because of the presence of Elohim, this one of Sinai. Elohim is, and then it repeats the idea, from the presence or because of the presence of God, the God of Israel. Verse 10, Geshem Nedavot Tanif Elohim. Geshem is the word for rain, and Nedavot here is acting in concert with rain. It's actually a noun that means free gifts or voluntary offerings, but it's an idiom here with rain, and it simply is usually glossed as plentiful rain. So Geshem Nedavot, plentiful rain, Tanif Elohim. Tanif is from the hollow root Nuf. It's a hifil here. Cause to fall is probably the best way to translate it. Plentiful rain, God causes to fall. Nakalataka v'nil'ah ata konanta. the syntax here is difficult. It begins pretty straightforward. Your inheritance, not Galah's inheritance. So it's addressing God still. Your inheritance. And then the nil-ah. Nil-ah is a nifal participle from la-ah. La-ah means to be weary, and in the nifal, to tire oneself out. And here it's a feminine participle referring back to the nakalah, his inheritance. The difficulty is the vav in front of it. And I take that as a circumstantial vav. So basically, you would translate it, your inheritance when it tires itself out. Or when it is tired out. Oftentimes, nifal participles just act as adjectives. Your inheritance, when it is tired out, ata konanta. You establish her, or you reestablish her. Notice all of the reversal language here, all of the powerless, weak, broken, tired out things. When God comes, when these things are among his righteous, everything becomes right again. And the fatherless are given homes, all the way down to the tired out land is refreshed with plentiful rains. The storm on Sinai may scatter. The storm God, whose appearance on Sinai scatters his enemy, that same storm brings refreshment and rain and provision and reversal for his needy people. And that's more than enough time on that, so we'll switch over to John 17.